This is an ABC podcast.
Seen them five more times up until now over the 4 or 5 month period, and they've been in very challenging positions and very noisy environments near aircraft, so it's been a real challenge to try and manage this pest bird.
The common minor bird has been a pest in the southeast of Australia for over 100 years, but now the introduced species is being spotted in the Top End and raising alarm at Darwin Airport. And also tonight, the man behind Silverton's Mad Max Museum has welcomed the news the production for the next Road Warrior film will return to Broken Hill.
When I was chatting with people, I was just saying, look, I'd be just happy if it was filmed in Australia. Without Australia, really, you don't really have Mad Max. But to have it in Broken Hill or Silverton, I mean, that's the icing on the cake, I think.
I'm Alex Simon, and this is Australia Wide. Firstly, tonight we head to Queensland's Sunshine Coast, where the rental vacancy rate is just 0.4%. And some charities are saying they've never seen a market like it. Some tenants who've lived in the same properties for years are facing weekly rent hikes of $200. And now one charity, St Vincent de Paul, is telling people to think about living elsewhere, hundreds of kilometres away. Meg Bolton has this story.
John Harrison from St Vincent de Paul fought back tears when describing what he says is the worst housing crisis he's ever seen in the region.
When I look at families here and I see some of the awful situations they find themselves in, it's heartbreaking, quite honestly. And it is heartbreaking, and all we can do is be as helpful as we can and try and make their journey a bit easier.
Mr. Harrison has lived on the Sunshine Coast for 2 decades.
The situation on the Sunshine Coast, quite frankly, is dire. Their vacancy rate is nothing. There are no rentals available, and prices are spiralling.
He says it's got to the point where people without permanent accommodation are being encouraged to live elsewhere. Traditionally, Gympie, Caboolture or Redcliffe, within 80 kilometres of the Sunshine Coast, had affordable housing options. But he says those towns are also pushed to capacity. Now, the suggestion is to move hundreds of kilometres away.
Where we recognise that there's such a gap between the income that they have and the rental, we say to them, it's difficult for us to help you because we can't see a solution for you. If there's no way they can survive up here, we have to be brutally honest, quite frankly. And it's hard for everybody. It's a difficult conversation, but it has to be had. They're feeling desperate, and because they're looking around, they see there's nothing around for them, and they're going to have to move somewhere, and it won't be on the Sunshine Coast.
Mr. Harrison says some of the most vulnerable people are single parents with children living on one income. Father of two, Brenton Playford, has lived in a Sunshine Beach unit with his 2 children for nearly 9 years. He's been advised the owners want to renovate, and they need to move out by the 20th of May.
I had a look online with my 12-year-old daughter, so she's interested in us having an extra room because we're in a 2-bedroom at the moment, and I've got my son who's 13 as well. So we really need a place that's 3, but we're going to have to accept the 2-bedroom if that's what is available.
He says the competitiveness of the market is overwhelming.
Looking at places, we went had a look at a few that had about 40 people in there trying to get the same place, and a lot of people had already made arrangements to move in before we even had a look at the place. So they just got applications online and just signed them. So that's all we're competing with. And I don't know really what's going to happen because I've never been in a situation like this. When it comes to the 20th of May, are we going to be booted out? I don't know.
Mr. Harrison says that this is an all too familiar story. He says the pandemic accelerated the housing crisis on the Sunshine Coast with an influx of people moving from interstate. But he says it's also been fuelled by low interest rates and landlords renovating to cash in on the booming sales market. He says the rental stress is particularly tough in the suburbs of Nambour, Maroochydore, Caloundra and Noosa.
Landlords are looking to get a higher return on their property because property is much more valuable, and they can. And I know it's stressful for families because they may have a network here, they may have children at school here, but you can't live in a car for the rest of your life, and that's what they would have to do if they were trying to stay here.
For now, Mr. Harrison says the short-term goal is to keep tenants in lease agreements where possible, and long-term to find innovative solutions.
We've got to try and be creative, because if somebody loses out on a tenancy, if they come out of a tenancy, they simply will not get back in. But I hope that people start, government levels, really think about how we can be creative and find a solution to this horrid problem. You know, we're in a wealthy country. We really shouldn't be having the amount of homelessness we have.
That's John Harrison from the St Vincent de Paul Society on the Sunshine Coast speaking with Meg Bolton.
One of the questions was, Dean, do you remember when Grandad tipped the backhoe over out at the ball?
ABC Australia Wide.
And it was like, I thought, okie doke, that thing works.
On ABC Radio.
And you're with me, Alex Hyman. Great to have your company. 4 years ago, the artwork of East Kimberley artist Mabel Julie was projected onto the sails of the Sydney Opera House. It was a proud moment for the artists of Warman. But just a year later, the place where she drew her inspiration from in the East Kimberley was blasted by a granite mining company. And as of last week, it was revealed no one will be prosecuted over the damage. The Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage said it found no evidence of wrongdoing by the company, Kimberley Granite Holdings, KGH. KGH says it informed traditional owners of its work, a claim disputed by the Kimberley Land Council. Douglas D'Antoine was one of the first people on the scene when the extent of the damage was revealed and says the reaction to the decision not to prosecute is deeply saddening. He spoke to Hannah Barry.
I was one of the first people, I was in the first vehicle, yeah, that went on site. Yeah, what I saw, blew me away. It was a really, really surreal moment. I was shocked, with what it was, that I saw. Driving into the site, we knew that there was an expiration licence in existence. So what I thought that I would see would be expiration activity, and it clearly wasn't. Kimberley Granite were clearly mining the granite for commercial gain. And the extent of the destruction, to the area, under an expiration licence. The first one, I was just shocked. And then when it dawned on me, when the true gravity of what was happening was realised, I started to become really, really sad.
I've seen photos myself of the rocks and things like that, but what did it actually look like?
Yeah, it was a mining operation. What had happened is that the resource had been, the granite had been located. And what they were doing is that they were cutting the granite, up into blocks. Really unfortunately is that those trucks, to get to the Wyndham port, had to go through Turkey Creek. And that's where the Gidja traditional owners, that's where they reside. And looking over their back fence, guess what they were able to see? Mm. They're dreaming, cut up into blocks, being transported to the Wyndham port in order to be taken to China, to be cut up into tables for somebody's stove bench or something.
You must have thought you had a pretty strong case going into this.
That's right.
The notice on Friday that they would not be proceeding with a prosecution because, in the words of the department, there was no reasonable hope of reaching that conclusion. What was the initial reaction when you heard that that was going to be the case?
One of obscene disappointment, that really, really quickly, turns to anger. We and the Kimberley Land Council, we tell, our members, we tell our traditional owners that they must comply with the law. They did put their trust, in the law. They did put their trust in the investigation, and they were horribly let down. And I can't go out there to Turkey Creek myself and tell them how poorly they've been treated. That's how bad it is. But that's just something that we're going to have to do. That's what's going to happen. The emotions. There's no more emotion left.
That's Douglas D'Antoine, a lawyer with the Kimberley Land Council. In a statement, Kimberley Granite Holdings said it recognises that actions taken by the former management of the company were not consistent with the wishes of the traditional owners of this land, the Marlangawam people. They say they unreservedly apologise for the hurt and damage caused by these actions and are committed to conducting all future activities in accordance with the heritage protocols required by the Marlangawam people.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Darwin Airport was dealing with COVID-19 risks, mercy flights, constantly changing rules and grappling with masks when airport worker Linus Nynum spotted a new threat outside his office. It was something introduced into Australia 160 years ago for pest control, but has become a pest all on its own. It's the common or Indian minor bird. In southern areas, there have been a problem for years, but a few months ago, it was confirmed that Darwin might also have a problem. Connor Byrne has the story.
Linus Nynum has seen a lot in his decades working for an airline at Darwin Airport. But he saw something outside his office late last year which frightened him.
I've got a feeling that they might have come over in a container on an aircraft for them just to pop up at the airport. I saw a bird that looked like an Indian miner. I can spot them easily. I've seen them many times before in the eastern states. And I thought, hang on, that's not meant to be here. I kept an eye out every day and eventually I saw a pair of them and then I became very worried. I've got a window that overlooks the tarmac. I would see these birds almost look like they were nesting under one of the aero bridges and then they would fly off across the tarmac and we suspect that they were going over to a drain to drink water.
The common or Indian minor bird, Acritotheres tristus, is not a bird you want to see anywhere. This is Sean Dooley, the editor of BirdLife Australia.
They're kind of the least popular bird among bird watchers because they're one of the most invasive species of bird in the world. The bigger problem for bird lovers is that they are very aggressive species and they're hollow nesting. So they'll nest in sort of cavities in buildings, but also in hollow trees, especially things like palm trees. And when they're doing that, they will turf out whatever native birds are in there. They can also kill them and their chicks in the nest. So they're not the most favourite birds.
And the man charged with making sure that Darwin Airport makes ethical environmental decisions to keep planes flying is Nick Fuster.
We've seen them five more times up until now over the 4 or 5 month period, and they've been in very challenging positions and very noisy environments near aircraft, up the top of 30 metre light poles. So it's been a real challenge to try and manage this pest bird. We've seen a maximum of two. We suspect that there's only two, but two's enough for a party. Besides the one sighting of two, we've only seen an individual after that, so it's hard to know if the couple are still around. We thought we observed some potential nesting activity. We got a cherry picker up to the top of a post where we suspected there was some nesting, and that was a false alarm. So we're relieved by that, but we're on high alert, always monitoring and looking out for the miner, which could become a pest if it's not managed early on. If they're sighted, we make it feel very comfortable with food and water, try and build that relationship and keep it in one spot, and then look at strategies to eliminate the miner. So things like potentially sedatives in food or water, and then monitoring that site a lot to see if we're picking the miner up. As far as any shotgun activity is really not applicable or appropriate, it's in around the terminal and in around aircraft, and they're very small birds. So we've only got a few strategies, they're very cunning, and we haven't been successful thus far, but we're committed to trying to manage this issue.
So while the airport was dealing with COVID-19 risks, mercy flights, constantly changing rules and face masks, operation manager Mick Clancy suddenly had to switch his attention to chasing a tiny bird.
Yeah, I guess it was a bit of a distraction, really. I mean, it's not something that would generally cause a problem to aviation safety. Our guys and girls, their primary focus is birds and other wildlife out near the runways. Our goal is to minimise wildlife strikes, and of course, where aircraft are taking and landing off is the obvious place where they're going to have a strike. So that's where we focus, you know, most of our attention to. So yeah, this is a bit of a distraction, I guess you could say. Probably something that...
Speaking of distractions.
We obviously needed to do what we need to do. Our staff do work 24/7. So on behalf of Nick and others and the wildlife community, they started monitoring and trying to record where and when this bird was sighted. We We've got a range of tools, for want of a better word, that we use to scare the birds, get them away from the movement area of the runways. So we've got our vehicles kitted out with lights, sirens and other alarms. We've then also got gas cannons that we can use as a deterrent to make a noise. But our favourite piece of kit is our firearms that we can fire pyrotechnics that make various noises, and we can get them out amongst the birds. They go about 40 or 50 metres, so and they've got various different types of noises and visual deterrents as well, and most birds respond to that, and we can get them away from the movement area.
Darwin reporter Connor Byrne with that story.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
For the past 40 years, charity Dress for Success has been empowering women around the globe to achieve economic independence. They offer women new clothes for job interviews and run free workshops on applying makeup, managing finances and interviewing skills. Recently, Dress for Success paid a confidence-boosting visit to Kalgoorlie in the WA Goldfields. Madison Snow has the story.
For some people, getting a new outfit might not mean much, but for Melissa O'Donnell, it's a new mentality.
The top I'm wearing has brought more colour to me, and I actually feel brighter than what I have been.
She's been styled by Dress for Success, a global charity dedicated to empowering women like Melissa to achieve economic independence.
Softer and much softer, yeah. Look automatically.
Actually, that
fits really well with your skin tone
and your eyes.
Melissa has been looking for work for 2 years and has found it challenging as arthritis has stopped her from doing what she loves.
I was an aged care worker. After having kids, I couldn't bend, lift the elderly anymore or push things. So the Max Employment suggested office admin, where you're in a chair and you sit there and type and it's not so hard on my back.
She's also struggled with her self-esteem.
I lack the confidence. I go to job interviews and I sit there and I'm nervous. I thought people would judge me for my weight. I went to a job interview the other day and did a try-on and got told I wasn't pretty enough. So that's where my lack of confidence,
CEO of Goldfields Women's Healthcare Centre, Gloria Moyle, organised for Dress for Success Perth to come to Kalgoorlie Boulder to run workshops. It's the first time the charity has visited regional Western Australia.
It's a wonderful little not-for-profit that has very similar values and mission statement to us, and that is to empower women, but particularly to get them confident and ready to get back into the workplace, if they've been disadvantaged or vulnerable at any stage of life. Particularly here in the Goldfields, we're looking at a lot of family and domestic violence situations where people are starting off again, but also the COVID-19 pandemic last year, a lot of people were out of work, particularly women. We also know there's a lot of homelessness happening here and WA-wide. We've also got a lot of carers here that are predominantly women who have either stopped looking after their loved ones or they've passed on, and it's actually time for them to regain meaningful employment and get back in the workforce. And sometimes you just don't have the finances or the support systems to do that.
Dress for Success gives women new clothes for job interviews and run free workshops teaching them how to do their makeup, manage their finances and improve interview skills.
Self-care to just build your confidence with your look and who you are.
Dress for Success manager Karen Woodcock says confidence is key.
A lot of them have been through personal traumas where their confidence has been eroded. So we do a lot of work with women who've been in corrective services facilities. We do a lot of work with women who are long-time carers and women who are domestic violence survivors. And for various reasons, their confidence has been eroded and they don't recognise that they've actually got a lot of skills.
Throw your hat in. What have you got to lose?
Dress for Success volunteer Nadia Marzo runs workshops teaching women interview skills and how to make great first impressions.
They don't recognise the skills they have because it doesn't fit the little box of what's being advertised. There might be a position that talks about organisational skills. And I can remember one person we had who said, I don't have organisation skills. She had a child with disability and she also looked after her ageing parents. Her organisational skills, she could have done the Olympics.
All the volunteers came to Kalgoorlie on their own time, but Ms. Marzo says it's worth it.
A lady yesterday who came in with her partner, he was just also so supportive of her, because they come in and they will say things like, oh, I don't wear dresses. And we go, okay, because you've got to be comfortable. Amuse me. Just put on a dress. They put on a dress and they just look fantastic. She showed her partner And he said, you look delicious.
The Goldfields is rich with employment opportunities, and Gloria Moyle questions why some women aren't able to access them.
I think it's something that we really need to focus on. I think that is definitely in the Goldfields a need. We know being women is a disadvantage, unfortunately, but also looking at our called women, our Aboriginal women, we've got our LGBTQI community. I think it's time that we really embrace that and looked at the synergy that, you know, a different point of view can bring to your workforce. There are at times some barriers to that, and I think really all our local employers need to really be open to the diversity and inclusiveness that we're really supporting here.
Melissa might not have a job just yet, but she says the Dress for Success volunteers changed her perspective.
Today has been an eye-opener, and I've actually stopped judging myself, and I'm going to come out on the better side of it.
That's Melissa O'Donnell ending that report from Kalgoorlie reporter Madison Snow.
ABC Australia Wide.
I think it's wonderful. I think everyone should come and see it.
On ABC Radio.
Yesterday, a wave of excitement went through the Australian film industry with the announcement that a new Mad Max film would be produced here. Directed once again by Mad Max creator George Miller and now starring Chris Hemsworth as Max, the film Mad Max Furiosa is expected to create around 850 jobs and inject $350 million into the economy. But few would be as excited about this news as Broken Hill man Adrian Bennett. In 2006, Adrian moved from the UK to run a museum dedicated to Mad Max at Silverton. Andrew Schmidt caught up with this Road Warrior fan to get his reaction.
Extremely excited. We couldn't believe it when we first heard it this morning. Well, it was actually, we just thought it was a rumour, just somebody that contacted us and said that they'd heard that they were bringing some of the production back to Broken Hill. And then when I found out, you know, it was definite, over the moon. Couldn't believe it. Just so excited.
You hadn't had any sort of whispers, because you know a few people in the film industry.
Yes, normally we get a little bit of inside information, but maybe they've been told to keep a little bit quiet. But I'm hoping later on today we might get that. We might get a little bit more information. But I'm just over the moon that you know it's definite. You know it's happening now. So really, really excited about this.
I've been waiting about 15 minutes to be able to have a bit of a chat to you, because you've had tourists in and out of here all day. What are they saying?
Yeah, no, we've had quite a few people through and said, oh, have you heard the news? You know, we've seen it on TV this morning and they've been on the internet checking the news on there. And so, no, I think everybody's excited, especially to have a production of this stature, you know, coming back here. You know, I mean, this is going to be big, absolutely huge. So it's going to be fantastic.
It was disappointment in many ways that the third in the three was not filmed here. It was just too wet, too much grass growing. But we look around here now, you think the countryside should be all right come later this year?
I'm very positive, but you know we don't want to speak too soon. But I think once we've made the decision to make the film here, I think they'll just have to work around that. Fingers crossed. But I know I think we'll be okay. I think everything will be fine. I think this time everything's going to work out fine. The production's going to go ahead, and it's just going to be, as I say, I'm still excited. Can't get over it, really.
Whether, and we have been told it will be filmed around Broken Hill, so no doubt you've got your fingers crossed that Silverton plays a major role in that, but just to have it in the far west is the important thing?
Well, you know, when they first talked about going into production to do two more prequels, of course this one I believe is Furiosa, when I was chatting with people I was just saying, look, I'd be just happy if it was filmed in Australia, you know, just get it back to Australia. That's what Mad Max is, you know. Without Australia, really, you don't really have Mad Max. But to have it anywhere in the region, anywhere around here, you know, it's just as good. But to have it in Broken Hill or Silverton, I mean, that's the icing on the cake, I think.
And your story was that you basically moved to Australia to open up this Mad Max 2 museum here in Silverton, and probably hoping that the third one was going to be filmed, so it was a bit of a bummer at the time.
Yeah, it was a bit of... It was disappointing. I mean, there was a lot of excitement. I mean, I remember when... I think it's over 10 years now, when I remember seeing the trucks rolling into town and with all the cars on the back and everything. And I remember the feeling it had then. I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, they're going to make another Mad Max movie here. And it was disappointing that they did take the production overseas. But on saying that, we did get to see a lot of a lot of things and meet a lot of people and make new friends through it. And it was a great experience. The 3 or 4 months that they were here was still great for us, you know, to have them here. But now, with this new one, you know, hopefully they'll I mean the word is they're going to stay and do it here, so yeah, let's bring it on, you know. Yeah,
what do you think it'll mean if it is shot in and around here?
for the economy, it's going to be fantastic. For tourism, it's just going to be incredible. You know, when people actually find out that, you know, the film's being shot here, and even after it's been shot, when it's been released and people see that it's been shot here, I mean, I think there'll be just an influx. Not just hardcore fans, you know, because, I mean, here at the museum, you know, not everybody's a fan, but most people that come through the door know at least one of the Mad Max movies was shot here. And I think it's just exciting for everybody, you know, just to have something like this. So I'm just so excited. It's just going to be, as I said, great for the region, great for the Mad Max fans, and great for Broken Hill.
I'm very excited, Adrian Bennett from the Silverton Mad Max Museum. And that's the program for this Tuesday evening. I'm Alex Hyman. Have a great night.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.